welcome to episode 3 of Brainstorm Bookcast. I'm your host, Abby. This is Georgina.
Hello.
And joining us at long last is our third co-host, Izzy.
Hi.
Yeah, there she is in shame.
Today...
Let's start as we mean to go on.
Today we're bringing you a 2-hour special, partly to introduce Izzy to the world of podcasting, and partly to make up for our lack of episodes over the last 2-3 weeks. So
this episode's a 2-hour long character discussion episode. We might have to take some of the topics we have written down out of it because we have so many. We literally have a page full of topics and it's a lot.
Yeah. Okay. So
should we have a look at the new book releases?
Oh yeah, just before we get started on everything, we've got a couple of new book releases as we haven't done that for a while.
Yeah, I have many. I've put on my favourites from Hyperball. And so I will just get up the tabs and then we can start doing it.
Can I just say now that I think this episode is going to be quite awkward because I said let's start as we mean to go on, and I think I've already talked over twice. So at the end of this podcast, I'm going to be able to say I told you so. I told you it was going to be terrible.
It's not going to be terrible. You just need to get used to it.
Well, you need to get used to it.
Yeah, we're used to it already.
You just have to make sure.
Oh goodness.
You should make.
Abby is the favourite child. I posted a sexy book review, but no.
I posted 2 in one go, so.
So.
Yeah, Abby's in the lead.
So, Mother Georgina,
what
are we looking at?
Have you got the tab up? New Book Tuesday.
Yes,
okay.
Yes,
so
I do.
Okay, so the first one is Dust Girl. Yes?
Yes.
So. Abby, if you want to read the plot, and then we'll comment on the cover.
Okay, so, Dust Girl, this is a new trilogy. This new trilogy will capture the hearts of readers who adore Libby Bray's Gemma Doyle series. Callie LaRue, something like that, lives in Slow Run, Kansas, helping her mother run their small hotel and trying not to think about the father she's never met. Lately, all of her energy is spent battling the constant storms, plaguing the Dust Bowl, and their effects on her health. Callie is left alone when her mother goes missing in the dust storm. Her only hope comes from a mysterious man offering a few clues about her destiny and the path she must take to find her parents in the golden hills of the west. Oh my god. Right. Along the way, she meets Jack, a young hobo boy, who is happy to keep her company, and there are dangerous, desperate people at every turn. There's also an otherworldly threat to Callie. War and Fae factions attached to the creative communities of American society are very aware of the role in this half-mortal, half-Fae teenage girl plays in their fate.
This doesn't sound very my sort of book.
Yeah, this just sounds weird.
You, Izzy?
Do you want to know my first thoughts on this? Cheesy love triangle.
It's
awesome.
Yeah. I'm one of the boys in question.
Yeah.
Yeah, my first thought was, Kansas.
Oh,
yeah.
This is,
is it
we
me?
Love America. Don't insult the American.
Is it me or does the Golden Hills of the West sound like something out of Wizard of Oz, though?
Yes.
Okay, it's not just me.
Izzy, the American listeners are 5 of them. We checked earlier. Yeah,
five of
you.
Well, we love our 5 American listeners. Yeah. I love them, all 5 of them, even though I don't know who they are.
But anyway.
Yeah.
The so, colour? Any thoughts?
It's got a strange face behind the girl.
Yeah, it looks like Dobby.
Yeah! Oh dear.
Dobby
from
Harry Potter.
Do you agree? Dobby has.
Maybe he's secretly the homie.
You can tell listeners there'll be a lot more laughter on this episode if you even read Izzy's tweet.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's just move on to the next book.
All 34 of them.
All.
As opposed to Georgina's about
1,496.
You've got almost as many as me. You haven't had it for that long.
Okay, next book. This one actually looks really good.
I Want So Wicked by Suzanne Young.
Do you want Izzy to read it this time?
Yep.
Izzy, it's your turn.
I elect Mother
Georgina.
No,
it's your turn. I've already read one last episode.
Oh, you just caught me off guard. Elise is a normal 17-year-old girl until the day she wakes up in a desert park with no idea who she is. That's concerning. After that episode, her life takes a bizarre turn. She's experiencing unexpected flashes of insight into people's lives, people she's never met. I was about to say things she's never met, then. Strangers frighten her with warnings about the approaching shadows, and although Elise has never had a boyfriend, oh, it's going to be a romance, she suddenly finds herself torn between two handsome but very... Is this another yes. love triangle? She finds herself torn between two very handsome but different young men. Abe, the charming bad boy whose effect on her both seduces and frightens her, and the mysterious Harlan, who's new to town but with whom Elise feels an urgent elemental connection, almost as if they are soulmates. Now Elise begins to question everything about her life because she's not a triangle. Why do these guys both want her so desperately? What are the shadows? Why does the name Charlotte inspire a terrifying familiarity? And who is Elise,
this is
really?
Desperately seeking someone to slap her.
What is it with books at the moment? Why have they got to be about this sort of thing? It is.
This is terrible.
I think I would probably read it from the fact about the shadows, but about the whole love triangle thing, I'd probably go, meh. It seems very Vampire Diary-ish to me. You've just got two mysterious people.
If you extracted the romance, it would be more my sort of thing. Because it's really unique in the concepts other than romance.
But I don't get why authors at the moment seem to insist on putting a love triangle, because it's a young adult book.
It could be because they're trying to say, well, this boy is good, but actually, is he good enough for her compared to this other boy? Trying to show how...
But they're just trying to send the message that you either fall in love with this mysterious otherworldly being or Prince Charming. For those of you who have read my review so far, you will know that I hate that.
In reference to her Ash review.
Yay.
I was about to say something, but I've completely forgotten what I was going to say.
This feels weird having you there as well.
I like romance books, but at the moment that seems to be the only kind of book available to young adults or teens. It seems to be the only thing we're interested in. The only problem that they seem to think teenage girls want to read about in a book is which boy do I date? And that's no. I don't like it at all. It scares me.
Yeah.
An update on Rainy. She's just said that she'll be free for our next episode. So.
Yay!
This podcast is so professional.
Yeah, have you been listening to our first two episodes?
Organising next week's podcast.
Because seriously, our first two episodes, you can tell we're not professionals.
Shameless advertising!
Oh, wow. Okay, I'll read the next one.
How about we move on to the next book?
Which is Between the Lines by, Jodie Picoult and Samantha Van Leer.
Something like that.
Please, I'm sorry if I make the names all rubbish and mispronounce them, but I can't help it. Okay, I'll read the plot now. What happens when Happily Ever After isn't? Delilah is a bit of a loner who prefers spending her time in the school library with her head in a book, one book in between. I don't go to the library anymore.
Sorry. I'll stop interrupting.
Between the Lines may be a fairy tale, but it feels real. Prince Oliver is a brave, adventurous, and loving. He really speaks to Delilah. And then one day, Oliver actually speaks to her. It turns out Oliver is more than a one-dimensional storybook prince. He's a restless teen who feels trapped by his literary existence and hates that his entire life is predetermined. He's sure that there's more for him out there in the real world, and Delilah might just be his key to freedom. Delilah and Oliver work together to attempt get Oliver out of his book, a challenging task that forces them to examine their perceptions of fate, the world, and their place in it. And as their attraction to each other grows along the way, a romance blossoms that is anything but a fairy tale.
Okay, this...
Do you know what this reminds me of? Have you any of you seen the film Inkheart? All the characters come to life out of the book. It's that sort of thing, isn't it?
This actually sounds quite good. I would...
Yeah, doesn't sound too bad.
This one a read, I reckon.
I would if I came across a copy. I'll just ask Miss Connor if she's got a copy.
But I think what we're finding a lot more as well is a lot of these retelling of fairy tales or fairy tale type books out at the moment. So I'm wondering if that's going to be the next big thing, where we're sort of moving out of the vampire-y, paranormal-y type of books into fairy tales.
Let's hope.
Yeah, we're going from evil guys to nice guys.
Mm. Well, actually, this sounds quite good, and I would definitely give it a read, because it just sounds... I don't know, because I'm just wondering whether he's actually come out of the book, or whether she's talking to him inside the book.
Yeah, I think it's quite intriguing. It sounds like an interesting storyline. So.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Isn't he in the book, and she's trying to get
him out?
But
how is she talking to him? Is she going inside the book?
Oh.
Or is he just talking off the pages of the book?
It's a talking book. Like in Harry Potter, the big book with the mouth which tries to eat Harry.
The monster book
of like
monsters.
That.
Oh no, the other
that's a different one. I was in the third
one.
Oh, you mean the one in the library in book one?
It just screams at him.
Yeah, when he gets invisibility cloak. Harry said.
Yeah.
One of those. It's about a girl falling in love with one of those. I'm reading this book.
Dear.
Okay, I think this looks probably more like Izzy's stuff than ours. So, Izzy, do you want to read the next one?
Can someone else? I think Abby should read it.
Fine.
Abby.
Okay. Blackwatch, The Secrets of Wintercraft by Jenna Buttershaw?
Burtonshaw,
sorry.
Sorry, miss.
This is in quotes. Deliver Kate Winters and be spared. Okay. Kate is...
Wait, Harry Potter!
Voldemort, yeah,
Voldemort going, give up, Harry!
And you will all be... Alright, okay. Okay. Kate is the one person gifted enough to work the magic held in the ancient book of Wintercraft, and everyone wants her either to lock her up or use her as the ultimate weapon. Her rare power is being able to walk freely through the veil between life and death, and she cannot control it. Hunted by the Black Watch, the elite assassins of the enemy, and by her own people, Kate flees deep into a tunnel beneath the graveyard city. She's still inextricably linked to the murderer and traitor, Sebastian, who has crossed the ocean and walked straight into the enemy's hand. As the Black Watch closes in, Kate and Celeste will face terrors that only they can keep from destroying Albion, and time is running out. Those who wish to see the dark, be ready to pay your price.
was that amazement?
It was meant to be a mysterious kind of ooh, as in, I'm reading this on Halloween to the little children to scare them, kind of, ooh, it's mysterious.
Yeah, it looks like all of us sort of thing.
Is it part of a series?
It says The Secrets of Wintercraft. Yeah.
So, I don't know if it's first, second...
I mean, the cover made me think, nah. But the plot made me think, yes.
The cover reminded me of Assassin's Creed.
Cover reminded me of... I can't remember what series it's called, but...
I love that game. Just thought I'd put that out there.
In cloaks on it. I don't know which series it was. Yeah. I think if we can get a hold of a copy of this as well... I'll see if Mrs. got a copy of this.
Okay. Oh, yeah, our main source for books
the
is
cover's
our history
very...
teacher.
Mm.
Yes, I know how desperately.
Mm. Okay, Miss Tropic loves us, we'll get it off
the cover's very...
Let sorry!
Me speak.
Oh! Mr. Shubbuck has taken the copy of the last one. Between the Lines. Oh, Miss Shubbuck has it.
Izzy wants to speak.
Sorry.
No, I don't anymore. I was going to say something absolutely amazing, but then I just thought, we'll move on. The moment's gone.
Yeah, like I said, our main source of books is our history teacher.
So I'm now begging her for books over Twitter. By the way, just a bit of shameless self-advertising, you can follow me on Twitter as @g30rg13_r.
Mine's just simple. Mine's just gal_Abby.
Izzy?
don't follow Georgina. She talks about
Glee. Glee is awesome. Don't
and
diss.
I don't want people to...
And now your username is Glee?
I'd rather people not follow me because follower is a nice name for
it's
stalker.
It's at ISSY _ rich, as in I'm so rich, which she is.
No, it's my surname.
Basically, I just told the whole of the podcasting world that where you are. Okay. Now you can be stalked.
Of course, the whole
I mean
of the podcasting followed. World listens to us.
Okay, next book, which I want to read. It's called Smart Girls Get What They Want. Okay, Izzy, do you want to read this one? It looks like your sort of thing.
Well, I just had a look at the names of the characters and I'm thinking you should read this one.
Okay, I'll read it. Oh god. It's by... Can someone give me a clue here? I don't know. Stromeyer? Couldn't she have changed her name for my benefit?
Go with that.
I know. Okay. Gigi, Bia and Nirja are best friends and total overachievers. And they use total in front of overachievers, so they obviously aren't.
Yeah.
Even if they aren't the most popular girls in school, they aren't too worried. They know their real lives will begin once they get into their Ivy League colleges in America, because we totally love American schools. There will be Ivy, and there will be cute guys in the libraries, hopefully with English accents. They're going to our schools, but when an unexpected event shows them they're missing out on the full high school experience, it's time to come out of the Honors Lounge and into the spotlight. They make a pact, they will each take on their greatest challenge, and they will totally rock it.
Oh, God.
Gigi decides to run for student rep, but she'll have to get over her fear of public speaking and go head-to-head with the gorgeous California Will.
Really? That is her name?
I thought it was a boy who's from California, but is that her name?
I don't know.
Bia used to be one of the best skiers around until she derailed. It could be time for her to take the plunge again. And Nirja loves the drama club, but she's always stayed behind the scenes, until now. These friends are determined to show the world that smart girls can get what they want, but that can mean getting way more attention than they ever bargained for. Any thoughts, Izzy?
It doesn't sound as terrible as it initially did. I mean, I thought it was going to be, oh, their ultimate challenge, get a boyfriend. But it's not. It doesn't sound too bad,
cool.
Actually.
Mm. Any thoughts, Abby?
I don't know. Oh, okay, we just worked out that the previous book is third in the series.
Apparently.
Is it?
You know, the one which we thought looked good?
Yeah.
Blackwatch.
That is third in the series. Okay, anyway, back to this book.
Well, Miss Connor said, oh, it's third, like, I've got the first two. I sound like... I'm just asking her for that one as well.
I'm not sure what to think of this one.
I think if I came across it, I would totally read it. Because I read a lot of this sort of stuff. And half the time it's rubbish, but there are quite a few good ones out there. You just have to know where to look, because you can get some really good books that are just like really nice to read when you're feeling really bored and you want to do some
light reads.
Beach reads, as I call them, because you can just read them and feel carefree and not have to get too involved with the characters and just something easy which you can read whenever you feel like reading. Okay.
Yeah.
Should we move on?
Okay.
Okay, now I think Izzy has to read this because it's her turn.
Yep.
It's actually a really short plot.
And all the users tune out. By Secret Letters by Leah. some German surname.
Shea?
Shea. I feel like I should read it with a German accent, but I just can't do it. Inquisitive and observant, Dora Explorer dreams of escaping her aristocratic country life.
The sky is blue!
Country life to solve mysteries alongside Sherlock Holmes.
Ooh.
Oh, there we go, Sherlock Holmes. So when she learns that the legendary detective might be her biological father, Dora jumps on the opportunity to travel to London and enlist his help in solving the mystery of her cousin's ransom lover. But Dora arrives in London to devastating news. Sherlock Holmes is dead.
Bangs head on keyboard.
Her dreams dashed. Dora is left to rely on her wits and the assistance of an attractive yet enigmatic young detective to save her cousin's reputation and help rescue a kidnapped heiress along the way. Steeped in Victorian atmosphere and intrigue, the gripping novel heralds the arrival of a fresh new voice in young...
It's just a shame that nobody will know her voice because none of us will read it.
It's just like, it was so good from the first sentence and then it just went downhill.
Well, actually, there are three words in there that made us not want to read it in the first sentence. It's Dora, Sherlock and Holmes.
I like Sherlock Holmes.
Hey, but writing a book to follow
I like Sherlock Holmes,
but
what they're doing
yeah,
here...
Yeah, that's the point.
Shirley here, they are replacing Sherlock Holmes with a young girl and her attractive boyfriend.
Wait,
yeah, that's an insult.
Have we heard this before? Possibly Nancy Drew?
Yeah, I've never read them.
Wasn't Nancy Drew meant to be like a ancestor? One of her ancestors was Sherlock Holmes? I'm sure that's the idea.
Yeah.
In which case, I think there's some copyright infringement here.
Wouldn't we know? Wouldn't... who wrote Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, Conan Doyle?
Yeah, something like that.
Something Conan Doyle.
Wouldn't we have found out if Sherlock Holmes had a daughter? Why would there just be a mysterious daughter? If Sherlock Holmes, we would find out if he had a daughter, for God's sake.
It's just a shameless spin-off, isn't it? And I like Sherlock Holmes. I wouldn't want to replace him with
anybody else. I just, like... The only modern adaptation of Sherlock Holmes is that I like is the BBC TV series. I think that's the only good one.
And also the Robert Downey Jr. films.
I've never seen them.
Well, I've got the first one and I rented the second one recently.
Can I just say Fraser's gonna kill you?
Damn! Sorry, I just went over 1,500 tweets.
Ow! My ears! For Twitter! You... Oh, I've gone deaf. Because of Twitter and you.
Sorry, Fraser, if you're listening. And sorry, Izzy, for busting your ears.
And Izzy.
I'm just apologising to Fraser.
Yeah, okay.
People may think I'm a little bit stuffy for not being open to change and not wanting a new kind of Sherlock Holmes character. But if we are going to replace him, can it not be, like, a young teenage couple who are madly in love? Soppy this.
Could it not just be Watson?
Or just the girl, or just the boy?
Just the girl would be fine. That would be lovely with me.
Just a bit of, like, old-fashioned Nancy Drew.
Mm.
If she's a good character, it's a shame that none of us will ever get to see her, because we'll just be like, I'm not reading that. So they say a good, like, arrival of a fresh new voice, yet because we've read this and gone, oh god, if you ever come across a copy, we're probably not going to read it.
No. It started off looking like something I would read, and then biological father down here.
I know, I mean, did they even know? Did they even use those words back then?
Probably not.
Biological.
No, I doubt it.
Oh dear. And ransomed love letters. Do you want to move on?
Move on.
Okay. This book, the cover, One of One Moment by Christina McBride. I think that cover...
This lovely cover features a foot.
I mean, I like the photography. They've used really nice film on it. And it looks like really nice colour displacement. And it just looks really nice. And I'm sorry. It's a nice picture of a foot.
And the girl's jeans are nice.
Yeah. They're like skinnies.
She probably shops at Topshop, that girl. The jeans are kind of peacock feather colour, but they're skinnies. Topshop always sell really nice skinnies. I have a bright red pair.
I'm just reading the little quote there on the front, and the quote's by an author who I've read the book of, which I think I really liked. And the quote says, infused with page-turning mystery, One Moment is a heartbreakingly... Wait, it's as heartbreakingly real as it is. As it is unexpectedly romantic.
Oh, God.
No, but that actually doesn't sound too soppy.
No.
But.
Come on, we can't reject all romances. We've got to like
I'll read
some.
I'll read it.
Go ahead.
Fine.
This was supposed to be the best summer of Meg's life. Now it's the one she'd do anything to forget. Maggie remembers hanging out at the gorge with her closest friends after a blowout party. She remembers climbing the rail with her perfect boyfriend, Joey. She remembers that last kiss, soft lingering and meant to reassure her. So why can't she remember what happened in the moment before they were supposed to die? Why was she left cowering at the top of the cliff, while Joey floated in the water below, dead? As Maggie's memories returned in snatches,
yep.
Nothing seems to make sense. Why was Joey acting so strangely at the party? Where did he go after taking her home? And if Joey was keeping these secrets, what else was he hiding?
Okay, actually, I changed my mind. This could be good.
Because I read Forgotten.
Doesn't seem too bad.
I read Forgotten by Kat Patrick, which is the book on the front. And it was actually really interesting.
By the way, this book is called One Moment by Christina McBride. You didn't say who the author was.
You didn't.
Didn't.
I did. Okay, and the last book. I think Izzy should read this, because this is really fun.
Hang on, one moment. I think we have visitors.
Okay, well, just tell us. Remember the time.
Remember the time
so I can cut it out.
Okay, one sec.
So you better have left it on recording, because we left it. We've left it on recording. So I can just cut out the same, like, the same time. Get the next one out. I have so many. There's another list. Okay. Which one is that? I think it's that one that we need to read out. That one's quite an old one, but I might move before we. Oh, we did read this.
Yeah,
one.
We read
okay,
that.
I'm back.
We're just looking for the book list, the next one.
Are you? You know this book which we just read about? What's it called? One Moment. Have you ever read a book called Between? I can't remember the author.
Oh, wait a sec. Between my...
It's got like the girl in the water on the cover.
Oh. Yeah, I can't remember the author. Let me search it. I definitely remember the title. Between... Jessica... Warman. Yeah.
I think that's
I
the one,
it,
yeah.
But I haven't read it yet.
It reminds
yet.
Me of that sort of thing.
I own it, but I haven't read it yet.
Haven't you?
Okay.
Oh, I quite enjoyed that book.
I haven't read it.
It reminds me of that sort of thing.
You interrupt each other.
I know. We're authors. Right, anyway.
Okay, so the last one on the list is A Midsummer Tides Dream by Louise Wilson, which is the sequel to Wuthering Heights. And which one of you wants to read it?
I take it it's me then.
Nah.
Okay. Performing Arts College, here I come again. Hold on to your ties, because I'm holding on to mine, I can tell you. Tallulah Casey?
Yeah.
Is back and ready to Irish comedy dance her way through another term at Dofna Hall. But now she's been officially admitted to the Performing Arts programme. And that won't cut it anymore. Especially if she's going to help raise enough money to keep the school from closing at the end of the year. There are also some distractions to worry about. The boys of Wolf Academy are lingering about, and they are still boys, but they are still confusing. Will Tallulah be able to test out her new snogging skills and ace her performance in this test project, A Midsummer Night's Dream? Only time and more Irish comedy dancing will tell.
I'll get up the plot for Wuthering Heights and read it, because it's they are really good books. They're laugh
yeah.
out loud funny.
I was about to say that.
In the reviews.
You were. Georgina was really eager for me to read the first one, but I never got around to it. So maybe we should summarise what happened in the first one, because a lot of the listeners may not have read it.
Yeah, I'll find it. Yeah, Goodreads has it. Okay. And the Goodreads plot summary says when it's loaded. I'll read the first one if you want.
Okay.
Hilarious new series from Queen of Teen, laugh your tights off at the very amateur dramatics of Tallulah and her bonkers mates, boys, snogging and bad acting guaranteed. Picture the scene, Dofna Hall Performing Arts College somewhere up north, surrounded by rolling dales, bearded cheese-making villagers, male and female, and wildlife of the squirrely type. On the whole, it's not quite the showbiz experience Tallulah was expecting, but once her mates turn up and they start their summer course, things are bound to perk up, especially when the boys arrive. When do the boys arrive? 6 weeks of parent-free freedom, boy freedom, freedom of expression. Because it's the theatre, darling. Theatre.
The theatre, darling. The theatre.
Unless, wait a sec, wow. Copy I read.
My mind is blown.
Who's had the plot for the copy I read? Because I think they all have different ones. Are they the same? Yeah? So what do you think?
What do I think? I really want to read these. They sound quite funny.
They are really funny. Because she writes in the... Like, she literally writes in the dialect. So you have to really speak it in your head so that you get what they're saying. It's just hilarious.
It's going to have to be very funny, though, for this to be bearable for me. Because, you know, will Tallulah be able to test out her new snogging skills? You know, this has got to be good.
It's literally hilarious.
This the whole way through. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to find the Louise Renison
silence. I'm enjoying all the awkward silences on this highly professional podcast and all the talking over each other and the tapping of keys and the, oh my god, it's not loading!
Yeah.
It's wonderful. We should have elevator music playing every time there is a pause.
Yeah, I've got to find some music. By the way, do you have any idea what music I could put for the intro? I'll play your
Maybe
sample
we should
of...
not.
I'll play a sample of what Masorba's given me. Because she said, yeah. Oh, try this! And I was like, it doesn't have to be book-related. Because she gave me a song which is called Book of Stories by the Drums. I'll put
do you know what we should do to see if anybody actually listens to this podcast? We should ask a listener to send in something for us to use?
I have.
Oh.
Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can. Well, that's delightful. Okay, yeah. Make it stop. No, make it stop.
Yeah.
That's delightful. Charming. Really us.
Yeah. Have you listened to the first two that we used for episodes 1 and 2?
Yes.
Have you listened to episode 2 as well?
No.
I'll put episode 2 on for you. Like the intro clip. I'll cut the bit out. Yeah? Any thoughts?
Yeah. That's all I have to say on the subject of that song. What's it called?
Nice. Peter Pan by Jacqueline Emerson. She played Foxface.
Peter Pan?
Yeah. She played Foxface in Hunger Games.
Oh, I see. It's interesting to know.
That's how I found the song. Found the majors.
That's quite cool. It's quite cool.
Yeah. She is very cool. How far are we into this? Because we haven't even started our actual topic yet. Whoa! Half an hour! Oops. Whoa.
Half an hour! It's very exciting.
Okay, well, we haven't even started the topics.
No, we have. We've done Izzy Welcome to Show.
We've done that. We may have
actually,
to...
I didn't really get a proper introduction, did I? I just talked over people.
I think we'll have to ignore the next episode, like the next article we had.
Yeah, we'll go through this next
Mary Sue characters, e.g. Ginny Weasley. Are we going on to that or not?
Yes, we are now.
Wonderful.
Yeah, we've got a lot of editing to do with this one.
Yeah, we're going to have to take out a lot of stuff.
And it may go
don't
over.
Say that in the podcast, because now you've got to edit this out.
Well, yeah, we're going to have to edit the song out, anyway. The whole song set.
And we're going to have to go over 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's official.
We might have to edit instead of you saying 2. We'll have to get a clip of you saying 3 and then stick it in.
Yeah. Okay, right.
Also, if there's any topics you think we should get rid of, just tell us and we'll cross them out. Okay?
Right. Okay, go.
Okay, Mary Sue characters, for example, Ginny Weasley.
Okay, so for those of you who don't know what a Mary Sue character is where they've got all these perfect qualities for no apparent reason.
And I...
Like, ev- Everybody loves them. All the other characters love them and they can't put a foot wrong.
Yeah. And I think I know why Ginny Weasley appears this way. I have a theory.
Yes.
Which I mentioned before. I think that Ginny Weasley appears to be absolutely perfect because it's done in the eyes of her to-be boyfriend.
Yeah.
The guy who thinks she's perfect, who marries her because he thinks she's perfect. Harry Potter. And so that's why she appears perfect, because he loves her, he fancies her.
Yeah.
He thinks, gosh, she's fit, and so therefore he thinks she's perfect.
Of course she's fit.
He just has a pick on everything.
I'm sorry. Just some of the things you say make me laugh. I have to repeat them in silly voices.
Some of the things you say make us laugh.
Well.
Any thoughts?
Mary Sue Carroll.
Any thoughts, Scroogey?
Yes, Scrooge.
I'm not Scrooge. Good grief. I had so much to say the other day when we were discussing this on the field, but now it's just all left.
I know. I had loads to say.
Yeah, for all you who don't know, we had a mass, brainstorming session in which I got sunburn all over my arms because it was lovely and sunny. Okay.
I had something to say about Mary Sue and Gary Stu characters, and I can't think what it was.
Oh, and it better not do brainstorming sessions again.
No.
No, it's okay, it's okay. I have something to say.
Okay.
Phew! In terms of Mary Sue characters, are they good role models? Because they can't put a foot wrong, they're loved by everyone, they're very cliche. You don't get real people like that, do you? It's like Barbie dolls. People try to look like, try to look like Barbies. It's something unattainable, it's not real, people aren't like that.
So yeah.
Mary Sue characters can't be very good role models, surely.
That links to our next topic.
Yeah.
Our next topic, which we can merge into.
Yeah, we'll just merge it in.
Okay, bad role model in teen literature. And we have a very good example here. Do you want to read it, Abby?
Bella Swan. She is a very bad role model. I don't get it when people say, oh, Bella Swan is like my idol, she's my role model. Because she sat in her room crying for 6 months when Edward left her, and then she went running back to him anyway.
Idol? She has no personality to be admired.
Wait, Izzy has a good point on this.
She is slightly awkward, you know. What was I going to say? She's nervous, she's awkward. These are things that anyone who's been through puberty can relate to. So she has no personality of her own. And I think for the whole book, you don't even get a physical description of her other than I was pale without the excuse of, I don't know, something hair, something eyes. So as she's just an empty shell with no personality of her own, I think people find it easy to kind of slip into her shoes and put themselves in her place, which is what teenage girls like to do, because they can picture themselves with Edward and the other one.
Jacob. Yeah. But this was completely ruined by the film, which said, oh, she looks like Kristen Stewart! Because when she was just a character, nobody knew what she looked like, so they could say, oh, she's blonde! Or, oh, she's brunette, and she looks like me! Ooh, she has freckles.
Exactly.
Because I have freckles.
It's just But Mary Sue characters bug me, and I know that they bug a lot of people because they're just these pointless characters.
But that we could do without.
They are so easy to create, though. You can end up creating a Mary Sue character without even realising it because you don't give your characters any flaws.
But I think J.K. Rowling had. She had any reason why.
Yeah.
Because it's in Harry's opinion. But if it was in the third person, she would have to have flaws.
Yeah.
Because if she didn't have any flaws, then we would just hate her.
Her apparent flaw is her very fiery temper.
But that is seen in the eyes of Harry as being quite hot.
Yeah, and it's just okay. But I know a lot of people don't like Ginny, but then people don't like
Hermione. I don't like film Ginny.
Oh, I hate film Ginny. She's just stupid.
Film Ginny's rubbish, book Ginny's good.
But people hate Hermione, even though she's a very well thought out character.
Who has flaws.
Yeah, she has her flaws. She isn't a Mary Sue character.
She's bossy.
And she has reasons.
Oh, goodness, don't hate on
we're
Hermione.
We're saying it's
a good thing.
We're saying it's amazing. We love Hermione.
I'm sorry.
You have to contribute. You can't just sit there.
I say something and you screech.
Okay, your turn.
What?
Your turn.
Oh, God.
Think of a Mary Sue character.
Think of a Mary Sue character and talk about her.
Goodness, I can't think of any. Just Bella Swan is the bane of my existence. She's not an actual character, she's just a storytelling device. Like, if the story was told from someone else's point of view, how would Bella come across? Plain, boring.
Needy.
She's very passive. She doesn't really do anything. How long was she kind of sitting in her room crying before she actually decided, oh, I'd better get up and
go follow after Edward.
She doesn't really take control of her own life. She kind of sits there and waits for things to happen.
She's a bit of a stalker. Something.
Yeah, she is.
She's like, Edward changed me! And he goes, no. She goes,
that's not being a stalker, that's just...
I don't know, but she follows him around. She always eats lunch with him. They never have alone time.
He comes in through her bedroom window and watches her sleep at night. Now, that's surely not a good example. The perfect boyfriend
will come
into your room at night and watch you sleep.
It's quite creepy.
We have an RPATS discussion scheduled for later on the podcast.
Yeah, okay, we'll get back to this later. It's just stupid.
Okay, we just have two in between before the VR past discussion. So, Izzy, this was something you put forward for us. Religion and books.
Me.
No, you both put forward for those parts of it.
So, I just had a little rant about a book that nobody else had heard of. That's what all I did.
Yeah.
Come on then. Replay that rant.
I think Abby should introduce this topic if she was the one who suggested it in the first place.
Well, I was thinking back to, we were talking about House of Night a couple of episodes, in one of our previous episodes. And I was thinking about that at one point, and I was just thinking about the different religions that feature in different series. Like, in House of Night, we have, in the first few chapters, we have Christianity as a very prominent role, because her stepdad and her mum don't like her anymore because she's a vampire person. And then we see religion throughout the book changing. We see the vampire religion, whatever it's called. I can't actually remember what it's called. And then I was thinking about...
The thing is, though, in the House of Night, they kind of make Christianity out to be some kind of crazy cult.
Yeah.
Almost... It's like, oh, my mum was fine until she became a Christian and met this guy. I can't even remember his name. It's been ages since I've read those books. But the main character then starts to hate on Christianity, implying it's kind of ruined her life and ruined her mother. And I don't know. Is that okay?
I don't think it is. I think it's sending
the wrong message.
It is. It's definitely sending a wrong message.
And especially to the target audience.
Yeah, the target audience is, I'd say, they're quite young. It's like,
it's
from
not
10 onwards, I reckon. Well, some of the later books, maybe not.
Yeah. But you grow up with the books.
But you do. But I think it sends such a bad message about religion. Whereas you've got books like the Narnia series. I read something ages ago that Aslan was like meant to be a representation of God.
Jesus.
Yeah, Jesus or
well,
God.
Well, the Trinity. Right?
Yeah.
Because he's the son of the... Is it Poseidon he's the son of?
I haven't read all of it.
But surely that's a bit obscure, so it's open to your own interpretation.
Yeah, but it's because I know that C.S. Lewis was a Christian. Or no,
he was
an
atheist.
Then became a Christian after like writing the Narnia.
Yeah, when he was...
Chronicles.
Yeah, when he was writing the Chronicles of Narnia, he...
took a lot of symbolism.
Yeah, and you do see that playing quite a big role throughout the
series.
Because
you see that also, if you think about it, Aslan was sacrificed for the good of others.
Yeah.
Which is like Jesus.
And you've got like Aslan's country, which is like heaven in a way, because
the
people who believe in him go to heaven.
Like in the last book, and the last battle.
Yeah.
When all the characters, apart from
Susan, who doesn't believe anymore.
And they go up to a different place where they meet all their friends.
Yeah.
So they've already died.
Does that mean that people of different religions can enjoy the stories then? Can they be open-minded and say, well, I don't believe this religion, but I can look at it from this point of view, I can understand this, even though I may not necessarily believe it myself? Or because perhaps the link to Christianity is so obscure, it can just be overlooked, and like I said, it's open to your own interpretation, whoever you want to see it.
I think with this, like with the Chronicles of Narnia, I think you can very much... Anyone of any religion can read them.
Also, I first experienced them as quite a young child. As a young child, I obviously didn't get the symbolism. Like,
yeah.
Experiencing the Harry Potter books, I didn't get symbolism at all. And it's only now when you reread them and re-experience them that you realise all the deep symbolism and how amazing these books are, because you just don't pick up on it.
I think religion, not just religion in books, but religion in the real world, plays a big part on what people read, what people don't read. So I know you've got some religious groups who won't read the Harry Potter books because, as they claim, they're the work of the devil because they're about magic. But
that's very extreme.
It is very extreme.
That's silly.
It is.
But
it's their belief, and they think that magic is like, it is the work of the devil, and because there are these books about a wizard in school, they think that it's promoting these dark
witchcraft powers.
But it's their belief, and that's what they've been brought up on, basically. But does that close the window slightly of what people can actually read? Because if you think about it, we have got a lot of fantasy books which could be seen as inappropriate for different religions to read because they're about all these dark things. Right?
Yes, but most of these aren't really set in the real world, are they? Fantasy novels in particular. So surely you shouldn't expect certain religions to be in them if it's not even set in our world.
Yeah, you will always have people saying, oh no, this sends the wrong type of message. I don't think my group of people should read them because I think they're inappropriate and everything. But I don't know if that's really fair, because a lot of books don't focus heavily on religion because it is quite a sensitive topic. And I think those that do should go about it a bit differently to the way that the House of Night books went about Christianity.
Speaking of certain groups of people, can I have a quick rant about Justin Bieber?
Yeah.
No, this is a serious point which somehow links to books.
Okay, I'll join in then.
Now, we all know that Justin Bieber gets a lot of hate. I personally have nothing against him, but I think the reason he gets a lot of hate is he appeals to a very specific audience. His stuff is designed for teenage girls and really no one else.
Tween.
But he's very good at... He's very good at what he does. He has lots of fans, so he's become very popular with his target audience. Then, of course, other people, other groups, like perhaps older boys as such, want to know why he's become so popular, and they go, nah, this is rubbish. Why has he become so popular? This is utter... So
it's like Glee.
They don't understand, but it's not aimed at them.
Yeah, it's
so
like Glee.
He has a lot of hate.
For instance, me and Abby both love Glee. We both really have a big following of Glee, whereas Izzy, because she's not part of the group that likes that sort of thing,
yeah,
she doesn't like it. So therefore she hates
but
it.
But Glee is terrible, full stop.
So
you're
Justin
basically
Bieber.
Yeah, you're basically just you're doing exactly
I'm contradicting
what
myself, but I don't care.
Do. You're doing exactly what the haters for Justin Bieber do.
But this
I'm just a hater, that's all I am.
I can see where you're coming from, how you link this to books, because you have got certain books such as Twilight. I can't stand Twilight. But
yeah,
it's not
it
aimed
appeals to
Yeah, it's not aimed at like
Well, once you hit a certain age,
they have
really don't get, like, we all liked it at a certain
yeah.
time. We have to
They
admit,
have a very specific audience.
Yeah, we have to admit that at one point in our life we liked Twilight, but then we moved on from it and we found better things, or
yeah.
more suitable things for our age group. And so, even Twilight has its good audience, and people
yeah.
love it. There are always people who
Do you
love
think that-
Twilight.
Do you think that there are any books that you can't grow out of then? Because you say, you know, we like some books and we grow up and we like different things, but are there any books that are really timeless that any age can enjoy that
well,
are not
yeah,
aimed at a specific audience?
Definitely one of them.
I think Hunger Games to an extent, but not young children.
Young people should.
But I think adults
no.
and teenagers can read Hunger Games, that sort of thing.
I think Chronicles of Narnia.
Yes, but think about old people. What about old people? There's not enough books for old people.
Well, are we counting our parents though?
It's a bit random.
Or do you mean like pensions?
Well, it depends what they read as a child, because Chronicles of Narnia could be seen as the ones that anyone can read. I know you can't stand them, but the Enid Blyton books, they were around the time, they're what they would read as children.
Yeah, my parents
would. And that's what, that they could read that again, because it would just bring back memories
oh,
of their childhood.
We were going to put that in here, weren't we? Rereadability.
Yeah.
We were going to put that in the topics, but we forgot.
Oh, take that off, then.
We're going to say, does a book... Does your knowledge of the book and your understanding of the book develop with rereads?
I think, yeah, because I came up with this. I was rereading The Forbidden Game. I've got the trilogy in the one book. And I was I was reading a bit about Dee's character. I didn't realise. I always knew that she must have been because she's from African descent, but I didn't realise she was coloured. I never picked up on that. And I think I remember a lot of people saying that about Rue in The Hunger Game, because I think it was disgusting what some people were coming out with, saying, I felt less sympathy at Rue's death, I felt less sad because she's black. But I think it was always...
Who would say that? That's disgusting.
It was horrible. I was just reading all these comments. I think it was on Hyperball where I read the article. I was just like, that is so narrow-minded.
Yeah,
it's so, like,
it's
20th century.
It's so upsetting for the actress as well.
I know. She's only, what, 11,
she's
12?
13,
she's 13.
She's like our age. But it would be so upsetting to see people like saying that they were less sympathetic to the character because you were portraying them. It's just such narrow-minded.
And then, of course, you had all these people who were saying, oh, she should have been there. She was meant to look like Prue. She was never meant to look like Prue.
She was meant to be the age.
Yeah. And
the vulnerability.
Yeah, it was that. That reminded Katniss of her little sister. And that's why she was drawn to Rue. And then you've just got all these people who are like, no, that's just disgusting what you lot are saying. They were bringing out quotes that showed in the books that Rue was meant to look like that. She wasn't meant to be white or anything.
You could say this is about how people like see the book. It's like, I'm kind of gonna...
Isn't that very close-minded, though?
I'm gonna go a little bit
and
off-topic and go into like modern affairs. Like, when you have people in like dictatorships, in Islamic dictatorships, who say that women are seen as inferior.
Yeah.
And they say that it's in the Quran. You look at the Quran and it's not in there.
No.
It's how these extremists portray the Quran.
I think, yeah, but because I read Forbidden Game when I was 11, 12, I think it was.
Yeah.
I never picked up on it.
You don't at that age.
No.
You just read things and think, this is a cool character.
Yeah.
There's subtle things that, like, for instance, when you go back and reread Harry Potter, you see all these references to later books.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't have picked up on before reading these books.
But I think that people who don't like a character just because of their race is just...
It's just not a very good way to see, go and look around life. Being racist is, like, towards characters in books who aren't real.
Yeah.
It just shows how narrow-minded people are.
And I think that books that highlight that and kind of glorify it in a way... I can't remember what book it was, but I read something and I just stopped reading it about part of the way through because it just seemed very, very... racist, and the entire thing was very narrow-minded. I just wouldn't read it because I thought it was disgusting. I just don't. That's why I like reading same-sex pairing books, which we will talk about later on as well, because
it goes against stereotypes.
It does, and I just think I loved Ash because she didn't fall in love with the Prince Charming or with the mysterious, magical being. She fell in love with her best friend, who was another girl. And I think it does highlight that. And that's why I love Glee, because it raises all of these, like, issues and everything. And I think it just shows that people shouldn't be narrow-minded towards everything. And it shows that the effects that this sort of people, you saying that, could have on people.
Georgina is spamming me on Skype and telling me to talk. Are you implying that I should talk over Abby and butt in to get my say?
Yeah, exactly.
No, you're not talking.
She is.
I was waiting for Abby to finish. I was being polite.
Okay. But for those of you who don't know, the book Abby's talking about is Ash by Melinda Lowe, who she just recently reviewed and posted on my blog. So check it out. Izzy, any thoughts?
Well, the thing is, when we read books, we kind of get a picture in our mind of what the character looks like. And sometimes, say you are a white person, you may automatically assume that the characters in the book are like you and the people you live around, because they're the kind of people you're used to being with. Mm-hmm. You kind of assume things. And also, about rereading, I definitely think the more times you read a book, you notice more, you see new things. In English the other day, Miss asked what you should do when analysing a poem, what's the first thing you do? And the thing that everybody said was, reread it, because new things just jump out at you that you may not have initially seen. So, rereading, you can definitely get something out of it that you may not have gotten out of it the first time.
Okay. So, should we go on to the next topic?
Yeah, okay.
I'll just check our time. Whoa, we've got nearly an hour, so...
An hour of drivel.
Yeah.
I'll have to edit some of this out.
Okay.
Good and bad characters.
Oh, right, yeah. So good and evil characters, I think we were getting at here.
Should we just skip over this? Because we've got quite a lot to get through.
Well, basically what we were going to say was...
We could link this to this one.
Yeah, okay.
I'll just get rid of this one.
Yeah, we're just going to link good and bad characters to...
Characters
we love to hate.
So, the RPATS discussion, Cedric Diggory versus Edward Cullen.
Mm.
This is purely to do with actors, not to do with the characters. We're going to go into the characters, but it's nothing to do with linking it. We have no prejudice against the character specifically to do with Robert Pattinson and his portrayal. We think he portrayed them very well. We're just going to discuss the characters which he has played.
Yeah, they're different, but they're similar in the same... kind of way.
We dislike both of them.
I hate both of them. But they're seen as these perfect, good-looking guys. I can't stand Cedric Diggory.
Cedric Diggory is the confident, as the Americans would say, jock.
Yes.
He's the very academic, but also very sporty, very good-looking. All the girls love him.
In other words, he is a...
Yes, basically. He's a Gary Stu character. It is official. Quite ironic that he goes out with a Mary Sue character.
Yes.
So,
but our hatred for Cho Chang should not come across in this episode. We've not put it down. It's not on the schedule, so
it will go in the Harry Potter special whenever we get around to doing that.
Okay, so back to this. Any thoughts, Izzy?
Is this about good and bad characters?
No, we on Cedric Diggory and Edward Cullen thing.
Oh, goodness, yeah. I don't really have much to say about this. No, I don't. Other than, I think that after seeing Twilight with Robert Pattinson playing Edward Cullen, and I really didn't enjoy the film. It was terrible. I now kind of look back at Cedric Diggory in the Harry Potter films.
Could you repeat that? Because you went offline a sec.
Takes a deep breath. After seeing Twilight and seeing Robert Pattinson play Edward Cullen, I now kind of look badly at Cedric Diggory when I see the Harry Potter films. That's terrible of me, I know, but every time I see Cedric Diggory now, I just see Edward and I think, ugh. So, this is really, really bad of me to say, but the actor kind of ruins my perception of the character.
I think that's exactly the same for me, because I went to see Breaking Dawn Part 1 at the cinema, and Edward came on screen, I was just like, kill us there! Because I can only see him as Cedric Diggory now. And I'm just like...
Like the opposite to Izzy, then.
Yeah, I'm the complete opposite, because I watched Harry Potter first.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, okay, I can't see them as two separate characters anymore. It's not...
No, I saw Harry Potter before I saw Twilight 2, of course, but... I still see Robert Pattinson as Edward Cullen, because that's what he's more famous for. And Cedric Diggory, let's be honest, wasn't a very memorable character. It just didn't stick in my mind, I'm sorry. He's one of those characters you just kind of forget about. He was a plot device and nothing more.
Well, I just want to mention about Cedric Diggory. Even in the first half of the film, before you get to the whole... Before they're at school, when they're going to the Quidditch World Cup, the whole scene's even up to that, where he goes, oh yeah, hey Harry.
Yeah.
And you see him, like, standing up, like, twice Harry's height, muscular build. Like, golden complexion, you just think, ugh.
Golden complexion, that sounds really unhealthy.
You know what I mean, like, tan.
You see, you should see a doctor about that if you have a golden complexion.
Izzy!
So should vampires that sparkle, but there
Google,
we go.
I'm Google imaging that. Golden complexion. It's actually a search result. Other people have searched this. Blake Lively's golden complexion looks best something or other. Ooh. Sorry, I'm going off track here. Anyway.
I was going to say something, I forgot what. What was I going to say?
Golden complexion. Be
right back. The dog is having a spazzy fit in the garden. Oh, okay. Barking at the neighbours.
I was going to say that both of these characters are... the perfect, good-looking people. And I think they both send very firm messages to teenager girls, especially.
Going, ooh, I should grow up with him.
Yeah, and oh,
and
I
actually
should
you can't, dear.
I should only fall in love with this type of person.
Because everyone else isn't good enough.
Mm.
It's like saying, obviously in every school there's going to be one of him. Yeah. You should wait for him. You shouldn't go out with the guy you think is actually quite cool. You just wait for Cedric Diggory.
And it's just like, yeah, because Cho chooses Cedric over Harry.
I am back.
Cho, she's...
have returned.
Yes, dearie.
We carried on without you.
It's me crying.
Yeah,
ow.
We got that.
I'm stuck. There we go. I forgot what I was saying.
You were saying girls should wait. Cho Chang picks
oh,
over Harry.
Yeah. I think that just doesn't send a good message to teenage girls, saying instead of choosing the actual being nice person,
she chooses the good-looking guy.
Yeah.
She chooses the guy who, because, you know, match best with her prom dress.
Even Hermione likes him. Just a tiny little bit.
Kind of at the beginning when she and Ginny are kind of like, oh,
yeah.
It's Cedric. Oh, God.
Yeah. And
I don't know,
he's a prefect or something like that. I think that was something along the lines. And it's just like, okay, so...
I imagine he'd be head boy.
I don't actually know. I think he's only referred to as the prefect.
Because he dies before his final year, doesn't he?
No, he's in his seventh year.
Is he?
He must be. Mm. Oh, wait, hang on. No, he's in
was
seventh year
sixth?
Angelina. Yeah, he's in the sixth year, but he was 17 before October 31st, obviously.
Yeah. He's 16, so he would be head boy next year on.
Yeah, he would have been head boy if he lived.
Because he's the sort of boy that people generally pick. Mm. Apart from in our school, of course. Because we're a very special school. Is dystopia the new paranormal romance? This was a topic from our wonderful history teacher, Miss Connor!
Woo! Anyway,
at history...
Would somebody like to explain what dystopia is? Because I don't think a lot of people really know what the term
literally,
means.
The word dystopia means a future that is the opposite of ideal. A utopia is like the ideal, the wonderful future that we all look forward to. Dystopia is like the war-ridden future, like the Hunger Games,
yeah,
for instance.
Yeah, but it's not...
But
it's
dystopia
not
is a very loose
dystopia.
Term.
Yeah, it's not...
A lot of books are shuffled into dystopia because there's nowhere else to put them.
Yeah.
Like Wither and Hunger Games, and they're all put together even though they don't really fit.
Yeah, we have spoken about this a little bit before. I think it was in episode 1. But I didn't have the best introduction to dystopia because I read The Giver. I wasn't a huge fan of it. It was good. It was alright. But I wouldn't read it again. And it wouldn't make me go, ooh, this is an amazing genre. I just want to read more of it.
The Giver. That was quite an interesting book. Even if it wasn't the best in the world, it was quite unique, I think you agree. And it made me think. It really did. I like that book.
Yeah.
For any who haven't read it, it's The Giver by Louis Lowry, which is LOUISLOWRY. And we had to read it for an English assessment back in year 8.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, so long ago, a whole 2 years.
It is. It seems like forever when I was in Miss Hudson's class.
Yeah. But anyway, and we had to read it and do a whole massive project on it. So a lot of people didn't like it. A lot of people were like, oh, it's in an English lesson. Obviously, it's going to be rubbish.
The problem is, I think because it was... We had to read it as a class. We had people reading out. I think that
I
hated it. Even
I eventually moved into the library
and finished it
in like 1 hour.
Whereas they still
they
had like three or four more lessons of reading it and we'd already
and
finished.
And so we were just reading our own stuff because we're fast readers. And some people in our class were, to put it like Mr. Heron said, sound like robots.
Yeah.
Some people either sound like robots or are far too enthusiastic. Like, oh, and then they said this and then...
Stupid.
Literally, that's what he sounded like. He was doing a comparison between
kind of
between Jamie and Chloe, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was quite funny. She was like, I do not sound like that. Oh, flick of hair. But anyway, so we actually prefer reading on by ourselves because, let's face it, class reading isn't a load of fun.
No. But I was saying earlier that I... don't think dystopia is any paranormal romance. I think it's more the retelling of fairy tales. Because
well, I don't know, do you shuffle dystopia and
I
fairy tales together?
I don't, because
some are futuristic, like Cinder is
which I'm
futuristic
about to start
one.
Reading. But
I should be posting a review of soon.
I still wouldn't class it as a dystopia because
I don't know, because it's so hard to class these things.
But I don't think
otherwise you just shuffle them into the other.
Yeah, the problem is there isn't like a fairy tale genre to say. But I think we are seeing an increased number of these type of books coming out.
Have you written years?
Well, about classifying books into different genres, do you say you class The Hunger Games dystopia? I agree with that, but there are other categories you could put it in as well. How about sci-fi adventure, certainly?
But fairy tales. Like, these sorts of, like, Cinderella's futuristic fairy tale. It's like a retelling of Cinderella, which is set in the world with cyborgs, androids, and still emperors and princes.
What? Where? When? Why? But when you say fairy tales, I immediately think of all these creepy remakes we're doing of old ones, like that Snow White one. They redid that, didn't they?
It wasn't
Snow White. Oh yeah, goodness, it was Snow White and the Hunter. That's the one.
Huntsman.
That too.
Yeah. So they kind of like put like an edgy feel to all these old fairy tales.
Yeah, because I'm going to keep going back to Ash. That is another retelling of Cinderella.
There are so many of them out.
Yeah, there are. It's really strange seeing all of these because you never really. The only retellers of fairy tales you used to find were children's books. I can't remember what they were called. I think it's something like the Princess Academy. No, that was a different series. No, it was Princess Academy or something like that. But it was basically for, I'd say, around 9-10 year olds would read it. And you had the characters of Cinderella, Rapunzel, Snow White, and Sleeping Beauty. And you just found all of them, but they were children's books. But now, if you look at it, we've just got Once Upon a Time, the novels.
Yeah, and I love this series. They're like short retellings of tales featured for a teenager.
How many made this into a TV series?
No, this isn't the same.
Once Upon a Time.
This isn't the same.
Ah, okay.
This is a completely different thing. This is a series of novels published by Simon Pulse, which is Simon Schuster, like an imprint of.
Yeah.
And the novels are usually retellings of fairy tales featuring a teenage heroine.
Right.
And they're written for a teenage audience, vaguely. And they're really small. They're not big, heavy novels you have to take ages to read. And I read quite a few of these. A good one was, let me find it, Before Midnight by Cameron Doakey, which was a retelling of Cinderella. And these were published, like, from 2002 to 2010. So these are all a vast range of dates here. But there are so many. They're all different authors as well. There's Cameron Doakey, there is Tracy Lynn, Debbie Vigui, Nancy Holder, Suzanne Wayne. And there are tons of them. Literally, I'll count them up while you two talk.
Yeah. But I think we are seeing a massive increase in these type of books. I love it. I love these sort of books.
19 of them.
Yeah, I think they're very fun books to read because they kind of remind you of your childhood, but they're also much darker.
A disturbing version of your childhood.
Yeah, but they're much darker, but they're almost like the Brother Grimm stories were very, very dark to begin with, and it kind of been made, like, I think it was Cinderella, the ugly stepsisters were, like, kind of part of their feet and everything to try and fit their foot into the glass slipper. But that's all cut out of the more modern versions of the fairy tales.
I've read 12 of these. They're just so...
Ew.
I'm talking about the Once Upon a Time books.
Yes, but she's also talking about
the Brothers Grimm.
Yeah.
But the Brothers Grimm, like, I remember in the Snow White, I think it was, the evil stepmother was put in a hot iron cage.
Yeah.
Like a red hot iron cage. And, like, kicked down a hill or something.
Yeah. She's just got...
And it's just really gruesome. You reread these old versions, because they were written in the Victorian times, to try and get kids not to do things. Like,
yeah.
Like, a moral thing, but, like, a creepy version to make the kids scared into doing things.
Yeah. Like, Forbidden Game, I think Audrey, who's, she grew up, well, she, at one time, she lived near the Black Forest, which is where the fairy tales by the Grimm brothers were set. And her nightmare in the first book was all of these fairy tales and told by the Grimm. And that just shows how creepy they can be. They're just very strange.
For a teenage audience especially.
Yeah.
Because they're made into films these days. And these days, the creepy version's made into TV series. Because TV producers, film producers, they think, I can make some money out of this. Teenagers like this sort of thing these days. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but do we? Does everybody like that sort of thing?
It's just that at our age, you're not watching Disney. You're not watching the Disney versions like The Little Mermaid. Yeah, we're under the sea, we're having a good time, all that sort of thing. We're not watching those anymore. So they think, so the whole, this reincarnation of the Once Upon a Time and all that sort of thing, the whole reincarnation of the fairy tale genre is coming back, but then the more either distorted or they're creepy or there's another element added to them to make us interested.
Yeah.
Because we wouldn't pick up the sugar-coated version.
No.
So gruesome, distorted, and disturbing is meant to grab our attention and interest us. That's nice to know.
No, more than the sugary, fluffy.
No, I understand what you're saying. Yay,
fairies and unicorns!
Yeah.
I like fairies and unicorns!
To an extent!
I have a pet unicorn. And a pet dragon. I'm special, leave me alone. I'm a special person.
My unicorn is more special than your unicorn.
My unicorn is called a unicorn because it only has one horn. But I don't get why they're called unicorn because they don't have horn. I'm really scared. Really stupid.
Okay, next subject.
Anyway.
Why are we analysing the word unicorn?
Next topic.
Brainstorm podcast, everyone.
Characters we love to hate. And we have an amazing example. Professor Umbridge of the Harry Potter books. Order of the Phoenix especially, but she carries on into the later books. For those who don't know, Abby just whispered stupid characters. Oh,
she's really mean. I don't like her.
But we loved her. Yeah,
we're not meant to like her, though, are we?
No.
Yeah, but we love to hate her. We love to spew words of hatred at her.
Yeah, when J.K. Rowling wrote about her, she didn't think, oh, this is a lovely character. Everyone's going to think she's brilliant. She wrote it knowing that we were supposed to hate her. But sometimes I think authors write about characters that they want us to like, but we do take a disliking to. Like, going back to Cedric Diggory, do you think we were meant to like him? I don't know. Because he was opposition to Harry, the main character, opposition.
And but, Harry doesn't like him.
I don't know.
Harry's like, he's like the ideal me.
I suppose we weren't supposed to like Cedric Diggory. There must be some examples of characters we were supposed to like who everybody just
Bella
hates.
Bella Swan.
But the fans of Twilight do like Bella Swan. I mean,
for the rest of us,
for the people the books are aimed at, for the people the books are actually meant to be read by.
Were we meant to like Cho Chang?
Because it's Harry's love interest number one, so I suppose we were.
That's a very good example, though, because she has a romantic relationship with the main character, who it is from the point of view of. I think we were meant to like her.
We should just phone J.K. Rowling and ask her. Yeah, we told her number. We should just go and bring her.
That'd be so cool. But, when did we first meet her? Is it the third book, is it? Or is it the second?
I don't know. She might have a reference in the third or second.
She does, because they're playing Quidditch against each other.
Oh, yeah!
And Oliver yells at Harry to stop flirting, basically, stop being such a gentleman. And just
she doesn't really do anything significant until Goblet of Fire, does she?
And then she's an even more major character in the fifth. She just hangs around.
Yeah.
We just want to kick her out. What annoys me is that Harry goes back. Harry doesn't think I'm her second I'm her second option. He just thinks, oh, she's come for me. Oh, let's go out. Because
would we miss her if she left? She is an important, I'm not going to say she's an important part of the plot, because she's not. There's kind of subplots going on in the background of Harry Potter. She's part of a subplot. Would we miss her if she went? Because these subplots kind of make the book more diverse rather than just a single track. Like, oh, Voldemort's the problem, that is that. We kind of need these subplots. We need Cho Chang. Because if we didn't have characters that were, if we liked all of the characters, would that be boring? Do we have to have horrible characters who we just really, really hate to contrast them to? to make us like other characters more.
Yeah, I think it's good that we don't like some of the characters, because it shows that the author is a good writer, because they can make lovable characters, hateable characters, and the characters that you sometimes like, sometimes you dislike.
Like Ron and Harry, it's like sometimes you think, they are such jerks, yeah. Go away. For instance, in Goblet of Fire, Ron's hateable moments, when he's hating on Hermione, we're like aggravated and we want to kill him.
And then in book 5, I couldn't stand Harry in book 5. I just think, you're such a whiny child, stop yelling at your friends and move on, seriously.
And also, when...
But I love Ron and Harry because they have the most adorable bromance
ever. I know!
We love them everywhere else, it's just those 2 seconds. Oh, and when Ron and Harry are being jerks in Deathly Hallows with the locket.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not their own fault. That's the locket's fault.
Yeah, that's the whole
thing. So we'll just
blame Voldy for that.
Yeah, blame Voldemort.
But there are characters you don't like Bellatrix. And you're meant to dislike them. Bellatrix and Voldy. I love those two characters. I think they're awesome.
I love how they're portrayed in the films. Oh, Helena Bonham Carter is such a good actress.
Some people like Bellatrix, though. Some people like her as a character. They think she's a total badass, and they think she's really cool.
Well, yeah, but...
I think she's a very interesting character, and I love Voldy. Yeah. Voldy's just fun.
Voldemort lacks a nose. He lacks a nose.
He does.
I cannot relate to him.
But I think the character that's more interesting than Bellatrix is Narcissa.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know that they also have another sister, there's 3 of them.
Andromeda, who is Charles's mum.
Andromeda is the white, Bellatrix is the black, and Narcissa is the grey.
Yeah, and I think Narcissa is a very interesting character, because
she's got a conscience
side to her.
She's also got a conscience, and she lets Harry live.
I think that was a very strong moment.
That was a very
moment.
Beautiful character moment.
It was very strong moment in the book
where she asks about her son.
Yeah, and she
lies to
him. Yeah.
It just shows she's protective of Draco, and it's just... it's a nice moment.
Yeah. What about Snape?
We love to hate him until we find out what he's really like.
Yeah.
And then I cry.
I did. I cried at
did you,
the book.
Did you cry the Ice Queen? Ice Queen, did you cry?
I don't cry at books. I'm very sorry.
You suck. I always cry at books.
I've just posted you a link to an amazing picture in Skype chat.
I love DeviantArt.
For the people listening who can't actually see this lovely picture, it's a lovely cartoon of Voldemort hugging Draco, and then he walks off and he's like, what the hell was that? And then Bellatrix comes along, and she's like, my lord, why won't you hug me?
Do you think Bellatrix actually loved Voldemort?
She was obsessed.
Yeah, or did she just idolise him?
That's scary. Don't start that. We're going to get comments like, but Bellatrix and Voldemort is my one true pairing.
I have actually seen things like that.
You mean you've read the fan fiction of that?
No, I don't read those fan fictions, but there are some. If you go on some of the Harry Potter fan groups, you will see stuff like, oh my god, Bellatrix and Voldy would be so funny together.
He looks so cute in there!
Voldy!
Sorry, I'll put the link in. We're looking at, is it how you pronounce it?
Oh, I don't know.
Chibi? I don't know how you pronounce it.
Chibi,
I'll post it in the show notes. A picture of... it's a little awesome little thing, and it looks like Voldemort is so cute.
Anyway...
Chibi Voldemort. What is happening? I don't even understand anymore.
It's just like a baby fish.
But, yeah, anyway, back to Snape, because Snape is awesome.
Snape is our idol. No, he's not.
Some people liked him even before... Snape's worst memory. I felt sorry for him after book 5.
Yeah, when you find out.
Yeah.
A little bit. And then at the end of book 6.
And then he killed Dumbledore. I was just like, oh, you complete.
And then you're like, I hate him, go away. And then you find out.
But then you do always have the.
In the back of your mind, thinking, well, he would have reason, must have.
Yeah, and there must have been something behind it.
But the thing when you're going, I hate him, is when you're thinking Harry. Harry speak.
Yeah.
Because Harry's going, I want to kill you, come here so I can kill you. And you're going,
just like, and then I cried when I found out he loved Lily.
You're like, oh, no! It's a tad creepy. But anyway, but it's just like,
I just feel so sorry.
Oh, dear. Do authors change our perceptions of books, e.g. Stephanie Meyer and The Host?
I won't read The Host.
I read it, and Miss Connor has also read it and liked it.
I didn't love it,
but I liked it.
Yeah, this is really close-minded of me, but because after reading Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series, I now won't touch The Host with a barge pole because I'm expecting it to be just as terrible as the other books, and that's really, really cruel of me, but I just can't help but think that. Though maybe I should give it a chance. Maybe I should read The Host. People deserve second chances anyway.
But I do exactly the same as you. I won't read it. I won't go anywhere near it. Because they're just going to be as bad as each other.
Yeah, I'm just awkwardly moving a word that Abby's told me I've spelt wrong.
Oh.
Okay. So that was our quick summary of do authors change everything from the books.
So yes, basically they do. For example, I can't wait to read the J.K. Rowling's new book.
But also I get the feeling it's going to be incredibly boring unless you like the dark humour.
Yeah, I think I must.
Dark humour is going to have to be excellent, because if it's boring, then I'm just going to put it down. I'm going to get a refund.
I'm going to be so disappointed if it's such a bad book that I'm just going to be like, oh, what's happened to you? Just go back to write a prequel or a sequel to Harry Potter, please.
She wrote a small prequel.
That doesn't count.
Guys, it's been an hour and a half. May we have a quick break?
Yeah, okay, let's pause it.
I'll pause it.
Okay, yeah, 3, 2, 1, pause.
So that's the end of episode 3, part 1. I hope to release part 2 soon once I finish editing, but until then, bye from Abby, Izzy, and me, Georgina. Bye!